This week on Terp Weekly Edition, we meet a student from England studying abroad at Maryland, the Terps men's lacrosse team looks for their own trophy, and how student groups are having a hard time getting the funding they need.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a student-produced weekly radio news magazine from the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is presented in cooperation with 88.1 FM, WMUC Radio.
I'm Tyler Radeke, and welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. On Tuesday, the Westboro Baptist Church, a group that has gained notoriety for protesting funerals, came to Hyattsville to protest at Northwestern High School. I caught up with Stephanie Woods, a reporter who covered the protest for Capital News Service, to talk about what she saw. Talk about what you experienced when you went to the protest at Northwest. What was the atmosphere like? Kind of, what did you expect and what did you see from both sides?
I was expecting a big community response on the part of University Park, Hyattsville residents, and also Northwestern High School students. And they lived up to expectations. There were maybe over 100 people there on the counter-protest side, that is. People who came to support Northwestern High School and counter-protest the Westboro Baptist Church protest. And Westboro Baptist Church had 4 people, I think, and there were over 100 on the counter-protest side. And there was a lot of... It wasn't homogeneous at all on the counter-protest side. I mean, it was supposed to be a peaceful protest, but there were certainly people there that were spouting messages of love and were peaceful. There were other people who were treating it humorously. One man had a sign. He was dressed up like a pirate, and he had a sign that said, "God hates pirates," just being facetious. And, you know, there were other people that were very viscerally upset.
You said there's only a handful of Westboro people actually there protesting. What did you expect? What did you expect from them turnout? And then, when you talked to them, what did you find out?
I didn't know what to expect from Westboro because they had planned or they had released a statement saying they were going to protest another school in the area last fall. I'm not actually sure, so don't take this as. There was another school, and I think Rockville. And they said, Deanna, another reporter, she covered it for another class, and she said that they never showed up. So there have been some instances where they've said that they're going to show up and then they don't. As far as what they said, a lot of what they said surprised me, because I thought if they were coming to, I realized that they had protested a lot of schools, but I thought there was some sort of specific motive for each school. And when I asked the founder of the church, his son, Timothy Phelps, why are you protesting Northwestern? He said, well, because like every school in America, they lie to the kids. They say that God loves them and he doesn't. And he started to go on. And I said, well, what makes Northwestern special? And he essentially said, nothing makes it special. We go to an area, we find the school with the highest number of students, and we protest it. So what I got from him is kind of an indiscriminate protest of the American education system.
On Wednesday, the Supreme Court ruled that the church's protests were protected by the Constitution, a ruling that Woods thought may lead to an increase in the number and size of their protests. We're all familiar with racial profiling, but what about canine profiling? Terp Weekly Edition's Devin Miller listened to one woman who wants to put an end to the pit bull ban in Prince George's County.
You know, this little girl would get her dog ripped from her home and killed simply because of its appearance in Prince George's. And that is inherently wrong, it's inherently un-American, and it's up to all of us here today to act to stop that.
Those are the words of the Best Friends Animal Society's senior legislative analyst, Letty Van Cavage, who has been leading an effort to put an end to the PG County ban on pit bulls. She told University of Maryland students, pit bulls are not the monsters they're made out to be.
So, you know, they're just dogs. They are not werewolves. Every dog is an individual.
Individual dogs that aren't raised in a loving environment, Van Cavage says, are the problem.
There is no documented case of a single neutered companion American pit bull terrier causing a human fatality.
pit bulls have been banned from the county since 1996 after a series of attacks. Today, owners of these dogs are fined as much as $1,000 or sentenced to jail for up to 6 months. The dogs are either euthanized or brought to an out-of-county shelter. Vancavage is calling for legislation that discriminates against reckless owners and dangerous dogs in general, not a specific breed. She showed a photo of a skeletal German Shepherd who attacked a young child to prove her point.
What's wrong with the dog? Starving. It's starving. So this is a very good reason why we need people to enforce the abuse and neglect cases.
She says the county and its residents could save money by ending the ban. Best Friends Animal Society estimates the county will spend about $1 million this year to enforce the law.
That's just a huge waste of cash, of taxpayers' money, in a time when we have budget restraints.
Vancavage is counting on the University of Maryland community to help repeal the ban.
We need you to mobilize. You know, you guys vote. You guys come to, you work in Prince George's County. You go to school here. You have a voice with your county government.
At the Stamp Student Union, I'm Devin Miller, TERP Weekly Edition.
Vancavage says there are about 12 states that prohibit breed discrimination. Enjoy drinking a lot? Brian Hoffman has a story on some new research on why it may not be your fault.
The next time your parents scold you for drinking too much alcohol, feel free to turn the tables. It may be on them. A recent study in the University of Maryland School of Medicine concluded that genes are responsible for binge drinking. The researchers used rodents who were specifically bred and trained to consume alcohol in excess. The study then manipulated two receptors in the animal's brain, which resulted in a drastic reduction in the amount of binging episodes. College students are most often associated with such drinking habits. What do they have to say?
I don't think binge drinking is healthy, but I understand like when people do it every once in a while, but I definitely think that genetics plays a role, but not necessarily for every single case.
From experience on campus, I mean, I know a lot of kids get pretty ridiculous over the weekend and when they go out to the bars and whatnot, and I guess I know a lot of adults that do that too, but I don't know. I've never really made that connection.
Meanwhile, researchers believe these results could lead to a new compound that would act as it did on the rodents, to effectively moderate binge drinkers. Lead researcher Harry June says these compounds would, quote, help alcoholics stop drinking, giving them relief from their cravings and from the anxiety that they try to alleviate with drinking, end quote. Still, there are skeptics.
I think it's more of a cultural phenomenon. I mean, back when the drinking age was 18, it wasn't really a big deal because high school students were allowed to do it. But now I think that the drinking age is 21. It kind of makes drinking more of a awesome opportunity for college kids.
So go ahead, keep chugging from that keg. But while you do, call your folks and scream, shame on you. For TERP Weekly Edition, I'm Brian Hoffman.
Still to come on TERP Weekly Edition, College Park bars have some trouble working with university police, and student groups fight to get the student government funding they need. I'm Tyler Radke, and welcome back to TERP Weekly Edition. It seems that even the few bars that are left standing in College Park these days are finding it difficult to be on the same page as university police. Kristen Foka investigates.
The new bar in town, Vito's Pizzeria, closed early Tuesday night, February 23rd, after university police complained about loud music, large crowds, and questioned the bar's use of an ID scanner. Sergeant Ken Leonard says that their goal is not to prevent Vito's from doing business, but to make sure they closely follow their property use agreement.
What's important in our stance is pretty much that we don't want it to turn into a thirsty turtle situation. So we're hoping that it opens the dialogue between everybody to say, okay, you know, this is how you're supposed to be operating.
But Vito's manager, Steve Kroll, says the city was aware of the bar's intentions.
I mean, we told the city what we were going to do. We wanted to do live music, we wanted to do DJs, and we're going to do it within the specific guidelines they gave us.
Despite this bump in the road, Kroll says they will continue to do business, but more specifically, operate responsibly, which is what he claims they've been doing all along.
Everything is still operating as it would have, as in we are only letting 21-year-olds drink in here. We're not giving kids too much alcohol. We don't even let a person walk in here if they can't walk straight. Like, much less, we're not going to serve people too much alcohol if they can't stand.
Serving food and alcohol aren't the only things on the agenda for Vito's. They also like to give back to the community.
We're doing a benefit for Walk Across America, which is a nonprofit group that works by picking up trash for the environment, and all the proceeds from the door are going to the artists that are involved in that program. Basically, what I'm trying to say is this place is more about music and culture. It's not about getting kids shit first. Vito's Pizzeria, can I help you?
Vito's allegedly has a hearing at the liquor board soon, though nothing has been finalized. Funding from the student government, it's how clubs stay alive, and as Kenny Gartner tells us, the tough economy is leading to tough choices for the SGA.
In the nation's rebuilding phase, even clubs at Maryland are scrapping for money. And in the early spring, it's time to think budgeting for the upcoming year. David Sensula, treasurer for the men's soccer club, said it was tough to get it together last year.
I believe last year was a mess for everyone. They had to make some line item cuts that I know they weren't happy about.
And even though the economy might be recovering, he says it's still going to be tough this year.
A lot more organizations are applying for funding, and they only have the same amount of fees that are going towards, like, that they can allocate out. So on the whole, I guess clubs will be getting less.
And with so many clubs applying for funding, different clubs have different strategies. Take WMUC, for example, the radio station here on campus. Business director for the sports division, Jamie Forzato, says the process involves writing down a list of everything they want to buy. And she mentions the economy as a problem.
Everyone's budget is tight. You know, I'm not going to lie, we don't get as much money as we would like, but everyone has had to cut back.
It's especially tough because WMUC is two separate clubs, sports and FM, meaning two budgets and two interests must be combined into one. And since WMUC Sports travels to games up and down the East Coast, they have to apply for travel funds, something that's rather difficult.
I mean, we're putting together the budget in February. The money's not even given to us until July. In February, it's way too early to tell where we're going to be going next year. The schedules are just not out.
They have to get creative and make hypothetical schedules, something the SGA rejects. And always, as David said, it's a very diverse group of clubs.
There's so many organizations that are asking for funds and so many different needs.
Working on solutions for budgeting problems. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Kenny Gartner.
David says the soccer club got 25% of the funding they applied for last year, and WMUC was in the same boat, only receiving a fraction of what they budgeted. You're listening to Terp Weekly Edition on 88.1 FM WMUC. Money. You're listening to Terp Weekly Edition on 88.1 FM WMUC. Transferring to the University of Maryland from a foreign country can be a stressful and scary experience. Emily Jacobs tells us of how a new student group is trying to ease the pain of this process for exchange students and help them adjust to their new life as Terps.
Karina Schlang knows what it feels like to be away from home and in a foreign country. This Maryland senior, who spent a year as a foreign exchange student at Kent University in England, came up with the idea for a student-run support group for exchange students during her time away from home. Schlein, along with Education Abroad and the SGA, created Terp Exchange, a group meant to help exchange students adjust to life at Maryland.
Terp Exchange is a quote-unquote buddy system where we match up incoming exchange students with existing Maryland students who act sort of like mentors and help them transition their way into life at Maryland and give them advice on things to do and resources and such.
Despite only being around for a year, Terp Exchange already has 100 members, around 30 more than they had in their inaugural semester. Simone Saltzman, a senior psychology major, says being matched up with her buddy from South Korea has allowed her to cultivate a new and interesting friendship.
I've really enjoyed it. I think it's like a really special, like, unique relationship that you don't normally get on a college campus. And so I think that this is a really good program that's been created.
Terp Exchange has not only helped create new relationships through group events and activities, but has allowed Shalane to feel like she's leaving her mark on this huge campus.
I've been able to come out of college creating something that I can call my own, which is nice.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Emily Jacobs.
For more information on Terp Exchange or to sign up, visit their Facebook group at www.facebook.com/terpexchange. Watching the women's lacrosse national championship run last season was bittersweet for the men's lacrosse team because it reminded them of their own failure to achieve such great success. Jason Murphy has a story of how this year the Terps are looking for their own trophy to add to the Maryland lacrosse collection.
After a disappointing finish to the 2010 season and the departure of head coach Dave Cottle, the Maryland men's lacrosse team has title aspirations in 2011. With John Tillman coming from Harvard to take over the head coaching duties, in its first two games against Detroit Mercy and Georgetown, the Terrapins have looked very much like title contenders. And as Jack Feely, crew chief of the men's lacrosse broadcast crew at WMUC Sports, says, he thinks the team has a great chance of achieving their goal.
I think the men's lacrosse program has a huge chance to gain its first national championship since 1975.
The 16-4 thrashing of Detroit Mercy and the 20-8 beatdown of the Beltway opponent Georgetown have proven the attacking trio of Grant Catalino, Ryan Young, and Travis Reed are capable of leading the team to a title. Catalino himself has racked up 10 points in the first two games, with Young and Reed adding a combined 13 to the tally. But how does this trio keep up its fervent pace?
I think, you know, they just kind of need to keep the consistency and keep that mindset of always attacking the goal.
Although the offense has been excellent in the first two games, it's a new face in net for the Terps that has been a great surprise. Replacing graduated All-ACC netminder Brian Phipps, Nico Amato has stepped into the role seamlessly, says Feely.
Nico Amato has really filled in the role really nicely. He's a redshirt freshman from, I think, Pennsylvania, outside of Philly. And against Georgetown, which was their first ranked opponent of the year, he was really solid. He started off the game with a couple incredible saves.
And the engine that makes this team run? Well, that would be faceoff specialist Curtis Holmes, who was at the top of his game against Georgetown, winning 20 of the 31 faceoffs he attempted.
One player who really, really, really came out of their shell in that Georgetown game was Curtis Holmes. Curtis Holmes was absolutely dominant on the faceoff.
If Holmes can continue his faceoff supremacy, the trio of seniors can keep punishing opposing defenses, and Nico Amato can control the cage, Coach John Tillman has an excellent chance of bringing the national championship back to College Park in his first season. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Jason Murphy.
Thank you for listening to Terp Weekly Edition. Our producer is Kristen Foka. Our editor is Emily Jacobs. Our technical producers are Brian Hoffman and Kenneth Gartner. Our social media expert is Jason Murphy. And our assistant producer is Devin Miller. Listen to us online anytime at www.twe.umd.edu. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You've been listening to Terp Weekly Edition, a presentation of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland in cooperation with 88.1 WMUC in College Park. I'm Tyler Radeke, and thanks for joining us.